trying to roll back the mists of time and give you a clear look at World War II and perhaps beyond that with Mike King. TomatoBubble.com is his website. We've pretty well set the stage and hopefully in a nutshell sort of overview, given you an idea of how Germany was just raped in World War I, forced into World War II, and that's the truth. We're not exaggerating here. We're not explaining away. There's no apology going on for any group. It's a matter of fact. A matter of fact. Look it up. Study it. Look at the pictures of the German dead in occupied, well, in Poland. We'll just say that. They're all over the place, and they're hard to find, actually, now. A lot of them have been expunged from the Internet, but they were there. So Hitler finally had to bend to the will of the German nation and invade Poland to stop the slaughter of ethnic Germans. It's really that simple. Now, as a backdrop, we have Bolshevik, Zionist, Jewish, communists, agents all over the place. They gave it their best shot in the late 20s, early 30s, mid 30s, before Hitler got into a position of consolidation to take Germany. They penetrated everything, and they almost pulled it off. They didn't. So they marked Hitler and Germany. We got to stop saying Hitler, Hitler, Hitler. It's Germany, the German people. We have to now look at the German people through a much different filter. Go ahead, Mike, please.
Okay, so now we're at the point where the only thing left was the the triggering event, and that was the slaughter. And there were also some incursions into German territory by these guerrilla groups. So Germany goes in. And what do you think is on the front page of all the major newspapers in France and in London and in New York? Germany invades Poland.
Of course.
Now, people didn't know the backstory to this. You just pick up the paper, you're like, oh, what a jerk. I guess they were right about him. Now, Britain and France, remember, they were bound by this mutual defense pact, which was signed just 5 days before the actual outbreak of the war. They declare war on Germany. This is September 3rd, September 4th, just a couple days after. So war is declared, and they begin assembling their armies. The Polish-German war itself is very brief. I don't think the Poles expected what was coming. They underestimated Germany's strength and resolve. It was over in about 3 weeks.
Right.
The Poles had hoped to at least fight a stalemate until the British and the French could arrive, and then they could grab more of a chunk of Germany. So that war ended in 3 weeks. There is no war yet in the West because it's going to take some time for the British and the French to deploy their armies. But a week, 2 weeks after Germany went in, Uncle Joe Stalin, our buddy, our future friend and ally, who FDR and Truman used to refer to Uncle Joe. Well, what do you think he does? He violates a peace pact, a non-aggression treaty that he had signed with Poland just 5 years earlier, and he invades Poland from the east.
Ate up half of it.
Yeah, he ate up whatever Germany didn't take back, which really was theirs to begin with. Stolen from Versailles.
Of course it was.
Stalin he not only gobbled up the rest, but the vicious atrocities. I mean, even if you believe the lies told about what the Germans did, they still pale in comparison to what Stalin really did. They rounded up the creme de la creme of the Polish military.
All
10,000 senior officers.
How many again?
10,000.
That's right. I want to be sure everybody heard that. 10,000 of the officers, the finest officers, most all of them in the Polish military.
Yeah. They drove them out, the Ketin Forest, one bullet to the head apiece. Dead. Now, of course, nobody in the West shed any tears for Poland. And in fact, as Poland was being invaded, they appealed to Britain. They said, hey, we have a defense treaty. You guys got to help us out. And Great Britain basically sent back a response, this is not covered under the treaty. So much for the British love for Poland. The Poles were played for chumps. So that's how Poland ended up. Now, in the ensuing 6 months, you have the British shipping their forces across the English Channel, arriving in northern France, where they teamed up with the French force. They amassed a force of 600,000. Let me repeat that. 600,000 men, an Allied force, equipped with tanks and armored vehicles and mortars and airplanes and everything. I mean, this was a major operation here. They were coming for Germany. During this whole period of time, which one U.S. senator referred to as the, quote, phony war, because, you know, even though it was a state of war for like 6 or 7 months, there wasn't any shooting going on. But it really wasn't phony. It takes some time to deploy your assets. So it was a time of great preparation on the part of the British and the French. But during this time, we have Hitler pleading in speech after speech, what have I done against British interests? Why should Germany and France fight? And he was urging them publicly to rescind their war declarations. He did not want war. And that was ignored. Oh, and you know what else was ignored? Was Uncle Joe, he didn't stop at Poland. He later launched an attack on Finland. This is 1939 or early 1940. This is during this interim period.
Right.
450,000 Soviet troops invade Finland. They bomb Helsinki. The Finns are able to hold them off, but they have to give up some of their territory. They gobble up Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia. They attack eastern Romania. So here you have Stalin invading six countries and committing atrocities. Not a peep in the West. There was just maybe some symbolic, oh, naughty, naughty, Joe, don't do that. But he took six countries.
Mm-hmm.
They were just fixated with Hitler, who's continuing to plead for peace.
And well, that was, of course, a theme that was created and pushed by the Zionist media constantly.
Yeah.
He was the designated bully of the world, the new Satan. Hitler was the new Hitler.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, he was Hitler before there was a new Hitler. Because he essentially was the only man this century who really beat them, whoever beat them. And
He was... And I don't want to have any email from you folks who may be new to the program. He was politically and militarily the last chance the Western world had to escape living under Zionist, bankster, usury, interest, and the horrible nature of monetary domination. The last chance.
Amen.
Germany.
That is the absolute truth. And it took me some time, Jeff, to overcome my own psychological defense mechanisms and come to accept that. It must sound very radical to somebody who's new to the subject, but it is the absolute truth, what you just said. And so, here we are now in May of 1940, a pivotal date. And the war is May 10th, 1940. Three big events take place that day. First, that is the day that Winston Churchill becomes Prime Minister of Great Britain. Okay? You know, Chamberlain, you know, even though he went along with declaring the war and deploying the troops, he was still a reluctant warrior. So there might have been a chance at some future point to reason with Britain as long as Chamberlain was Prime Minister. But once Churchill came into office, the man that Hitler referred to as a mad arsonist, it was a done deal. You knew the party was about to start. That's May 10th. The second thing that happened on May 10th is Great Britain invaded Iceland. They just went right in and they established bases there against Iceland's wishes. Iceland said, get out of here. This is our country. Britain's like, what are you going to do about it? So they set up shop in Iceland as a naval base, from which they can, you know, target shipping. And then the third event, major event that day was Germany launches a preemptive invasion of Norway and Denmark because Britain was establishing bases in those countries as well. So, you know, that's it. That's how the, that happened in April. the occupation of Norway and Denmark. And it wasn't the whole country. It was just a base in Norway because the British were going to plant mines in order to interfere with German shipping. And they wanted to establish a base in Denmark because Denmark borders Germany. But the other thing that happened on May 10th was Hitler moved westward to attack the English and French armies. I guess we could resume with that on the other side of the music.
Very good, sir. All right.
Okay.
We're giving it to you straight, folks. And honestly, if you have any doubts, we urge you to do your research.
TomatoBubble.com.
That's where to go. Okay, be right back with Mike. Okay, talking to Mike King about history and what it means to all of us. All right, Mike, go ahead.
Okay, so we have the 600,000 British and French troops. We have the British government about to make a deal with Holland and Belgium and Luxembourg to allow passage for those 600,000 troops to come through those countries and into Germany. So Hitler's hand is clearly forced. So on the same day that Churchill's come to power, as an act of national self-defense, Germany takes the fight to the Allied troops before they can bring it to German soil. And it's a stunning blitzkrieg westward. It's a huge success for Germany. I mean, they push virtually the entire Allied force back to the beaches of northern France.
Right.
Where they're pinned with their backs against the ocean. They don't know what hit them. They've got nowhere to go. Hitler's generals are urging him to capture the entire force.
Could have easily.
Oh, easily. Where are they going to go? Their back is up against the English Channel.
Yep.
And all their artillery has been abandoned. I mean, they're done. I mean, can you imagine, Jeff, what good old Uncle Joe would have done to them?
Yeah.
So what does Hitler do? He defies the advice of his generals, and he says, listen, I want the British to be able to escape with their dignity intact so that they'll be more predisposed to putting an end to this war. He calls a halt to the German advance, and thousands of British fishermen with their little boats come across the English Channel, and they evacuate the
One of Hitler's fatal mistakes.
Well, it was, because these men later would come back to fight Germany again. But if Hitler had a weakness as a tactician, I think he failed to anticipate the degree of the evil of his adversaries.
He didn't understand it, or he didn't want to go there, one or the other. The British were, without question, in their own way, every bit as cruel as the Soviet hordes, but they just did it from the air with their bombers.
Oh, they've always been that way. You go back to the American Revolution, they used to use the Indians to scalp American colonies. I mean,
right. Well, and South Africa, the Boer War. I mean,
Of
course.
So,
India, slaughtering India.
So what does this lunatic, cigar-chomping, alcoholic,
depraved alcoholic,
depraved alcoholic, pardon the vulgarity, scumbag Winston Churchill do? Well, he spins the boat lift into a victory. For Britain, we escaped right under Hitler's nose. The grit of the British people.
It's amazing, yeah.
Yeah, and they bought it. And this is how Dunkirk is portrayed to this day. It was a gracious act by Hitler. And what was this thanks for it? Well, Churchill then decides without a presence on the continent, the only hope he has is to launch his words in a private letter to the minister of the British Air Force. Quote, an exterminating attack upon Germany. That was the only card Churchill had to play.
Mm-hmm.
Terror bombing of German civilians. Britain then proceeds on 8 different occasions. This is all documented in German newspapers. There's photos of this. This is not something that can be denied. You can ignore it, but you can't deny it. They bombed German civilian areas 8 times. Germany refused to respond in kind. They were limited to only military targets. Finally, Germany is pushed to a point where Hitler says, listen, you hit our civilians again one more time, we're going to have to respond likewise. And what do you think happened when the first German bomb landed in a British city? Headlines all over the world, big bad Hitler bombing civilians, killing women and children. Nothing said about the what would in time be literally billions of Germans who were incinerated, burned
millions.
Alive,
millions.
Crushed to death,
yeah.
Suffocated.
Yeah. You know how many Brits died in all the bombing by the German Air Force in World War II? All the bombing of England? Approximately 40 to 45,000 is the best guess I can come up with. That's
actually the highest I've heard. I mean,
I've seen it down 25
or
30.
David Irving puts it at 25. But
yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. Okay. In other words, it's not even registering. Schweinfurt, one night. Munster. We don't even have to go to Dresden. 400 to 600,000 in 2 to 3 days. Anyway, the British were inhuman. Just inhuman.
Absolutely. Churchill was just a beast. I mean, you go back to when he was the head of the British Admiralty. He set up the Lusitania to be sunk. That's a whole other story. But just the evil is astonishing.
You really know your history. That's amazing. Yeah.
I spent a lot of time researching this. You have to find some of these details in places where you least expect it. I mean, I even go through old copies of newspapers from the 40s, and you'd be amazed at some of the tidbits that turn up. So there we are. We now have an air war. Britain does not have a foothold on the continent, though, and that's key for them. They have to get their armies deployed on the continent. So Churchill's next move is towards what he calls the southern underbelly of Europe, the weak underbelly of Europe. He wants to establish troops somewhere in the south of Europe that could advance on Germany. So to that end, he gets a break from Benito Mussolini, who really was a huge burden upon Germany.
Just like a millstone. Awful.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Hitler at one point at the end of the war, he wrote that, looking back, he'd have given Italy anything just to stay out of the war. But, mm-hmm. Mussolini did not enter the war initially because, he wanted to see what was going on. When he saw how strong Germany was and how Britain was kicked off the continent and how France later signed an armistice. Oh, by the way, when France signed the armistice, the Germans did not ask for one penny from France. Okay? Nothing. They didn't take any land.
Another forgotten crucial fact. Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Unlike the Versailles Treaty.
No punitive actions at all.
Nope. All they said is, listen, we have to occupy northern France till the war is over in case the Brits reinvade. And it was a peaceful occupation. In time, the Parisian citizens, many of them, fraternized with German soldiers. But it was after Dunkirk, Mussolini declares war on France, and he attacks the British in Egypt. So he's... One German general described Mussolini as a circus clown who comes out after the trapeze artist has performed his act, and he takes a bow.
Wow, funny. All right, that's another extraordinary section on the truth of what happened in World War II. We'll do more with Mike as we continue right after the short break at the bottom of the hour, so stay right there. Okay, history as it really happened. You're getting a good look at it tonight with Mike King, tomatobubble.com. We talked about Dunkirk and how Hitler did not want to destroy the British military. He wanted them to be able to at least save face, and thought incorrectly that the British really did want peace and would wake up and not pursue the issue, because Hitler's eyes, of course, were looking eastward. The last truly great threat on the planet after Britain would be the Soviet Bolshevik communist hordes under Joe Stalin. And he knew that there was going to be a massive war there. And he knew that. He didn't want a two-front war. He even, not only did he let the British troops be evacuated from Dunkirk, which really angered his top generals, but he sent to England somebody by the name of Rudolf Hess, who many of you have heard, to try to negotiate peace with the British. There was a very large contingent in the British royal government and in the upper echelons of British society that wanted peace with Germany. The two countries were very, very closely blood related in many ways. So he sent Hess, who parachuted, I believe, into Scotland. And unfortunately for Hess, he landed in the wrong place and was not picked up by the so-called anti-war factions of German culture. And that was pretty much the end of that effort. But Germany tried. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, so we left off with Mussolini now picking a fight with England and France. I guess he's jealous of Germany's perceived success. And he figures now with Germany on his side, he can do what he wants. But he creates a huge burden for Germany. The fighting goes poorly in North Africa. England at the time occupied Egypt. So Germany has to send armies to North Africa to basically bail out Mussolini. So that's a diversion of manpower. Perhaps the biggest disaster of the war was when Mussolini attacked Greece. There were some islands that were in question. So they invade Greece. The Greeks put up a valiant defense, and they're actually beating the Italians. Now, the problem this causes for Germany, and mind you, prior to this, Germany and Greece had excellent relations. There's no problem. But the British come along now, and they say to the Greeks, hey, could you use a little help with the Italians? We'll help you out. And Hitler could not allow that, because that once Britain had a foothold on the continent again, there's that soft underbelly. So, he really didn't want to do this, but they had to occupy Greece. And naturally, when the Germans come in, the Greeks resent it. They don't understand the whole backstory to this. So they end up fighting the Germans. They're still resentful to this day. But again, Germany had no choice. At this same point in time, the British Secret Service have fomented a coup in Yugoslavia, which had previously been neutral and friendly towards Germany. Now they had a hostile government in Yugoslavia that was pro-communist.
Right.
So Germany goes into Yugoslavia. And again, as Germany is going into these countries, the native population is very resentful, understandably, but they don't know the whole story. So again, this is another diversion of manpower for Germany. But this invasion of Greece, I believe, turns out to be a turning point in the war, because by having to go to Greece to bail out Italy, he had to delay the attack on the Soviet Union, which, by the way, was preparing to invade all of Europe. That's why he attacked the Soviet Union. But he had to delay it by almost a couple months.
Uh-huh.
And in so doing, I mean, you recall, they almost made it to Moscow. They were within, what, 15, 20 miles of Moscow.
Something like that.
If they had had that extra 2 months, it's highly likely that the whole Soviet system might have collapsed. But because of the delay and the diversion of manpower, it gave Stalin some time to recover and get re-equipped by the United States Lend-Lease program and to get back into the game. So what you have now, we're in 1941. we're approaching the winter of 1941. You basically have pretty much all of Europe either under German control or neutral or friendly, sympathetic towards Germany. Countries like Spain and Portugal were pro-German, although they didn't enter the war. So to the casual observer, the average Joe in the street, it appears as though, my goodness, Hitler's conquered all of Europe. But in reality, every step of the way was a defensive preemptive measure aimed at keeping the British off the continent,
right,
or keeping the Soviets out of Europe. So that's where we are in late 1941. The situation is getting desperate for the globalists and the communists. Intense pressure is building up in the United States, the only country that can bail out the New World Order at this point. You have that degenerate liar FDR promising, your boys will not go to foreign wars. I will say it again and again and again. And based on these empty promises, these lies, he was reelected in 1940.
All true.
Yeah. The whole time, I mean, he's instituted a peacetime draft, the only peacetime draft ever in American history. How many people know that FDR drafted American boys during peacetime? He was the whole time behind the scenes. They were provoking Germany. There was military assistance to Great Britain. We took over the occupation of Iceland for Great Britain. This is all the time where we're supposedly neutral. We helped the British to sink the Bismarck, kill 1,000 German sailors. We were impounding German vessels. Hitler knew all of this.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't respond, because that's the last thing he wanted, is the United States to come into the war.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All true again. FDR, one of the biggest two-faced liars. Again, we've had some great ones, and I mean great in quotes, but he was really one of the most treacherous. And his government was just rife with communists. I think most of you know that by now. Okay, back in just a couple minutes with Mike as we continue to be our last segment looking at history with Mike tonight. TomatoBubble.com is his website, so do visit it. We see the same Zionist banker. It's a template. We see it over and over and over again. Same game, same thing. It's really disgustingly, revoltingly identical. Their pattern of conquest of sovereign nations, which will not knuckle under to their central banking model. How many times have we seen it? All right, please go ahead. One segment to go here, so let's try and make as much headway as we can and invite everyone to tomatobubble.com. to continue their education through your really remarkable work.
Well, thank you, Jeff. Okay, we're in 1941. The communists are on the ropes. The Soviet Union is on its way out. Intense pressure building up amongst the communists and the Jewish media in the United States, which was entirely in, the mass media was entirely in Jewish hands at that time. CBS, NBC, New York Times, Washington Post, those were the big four, all Jewish owners. Lindbergh is warning about Jewish pressure to drive us into war. And in spite of all the anti-Hitler propaganda, Americans did not want to go to another war. So,
by the way, you can see Lindbergh's remarkable speech. What is it, 1940? Madison Square Garden, I think.
September 11th, I think it was 1941.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's on YouTube. It's also at tomatobobble.com. You can find it.
Very good.
So it was going to take an event, okay, to really galvanize the American public.
Kind of like a 9/11, folks.
Exactly. Yeah. Like you said, a template. That's what it is. It just so happened that Japan, Italy, and Germany were allied in something called the Tripartite Pact, which they felt that if they stuck together, it could keep the United States out of the war. Ironically, it had the opposite effect. FDR, seeing that there was no way into the European war, that Hitler wasn't going to take his bait, he figured he could bait Japan. And he really did bait Japan. In the interest of time, I won't get into all of it. I'll just say this, that Japan was put in a position where making the first move at Pearl Harbor was really made sense from their perspective. They knew America was coming into the war. They figured, let's at least, you know, get an early advantage. FDR set it up. He knew about it in advance. The Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, and again, you know, the American people were as brain dead back then as they are today. They say, wow, unprovoked attack. Why would they do this? And instantly, people like Charles Lindbergh were discredited, and hundreds of thousands of suckers lined up at the recruiting offices the following day to go off to war. And, you know, war with Japan meant war with Germany and Italy, and that's how the United States entered the war. It would be, I guess, about another year before we actually established a presence in North Africa. And there were the classic struggles between George Patton and Erwin Rommel. Eventually, America prevailed in North Africa. During this time, enormous military aid was being sent to Uncle Joe. I mean, hundreds of thousands of tanks, armored vehicles, advanced Tommy gun machine guns, even things like blankets and food. We equipped the Soviet hordes. I mean, they had the manpower. They had the limitless manpower. But the extent that the United States supplied Uncle Joe is just staggering.
And of course, he paid back every bit of it.
Yeah.
As in not one penny. As in, yeah. How much have the Zionist Israelis paid back? Not one penny.
Nothing. So we bailed out the man who was the greatest monster, one of the greatest monsters in history, and our true enemy by his own declaration. So ironic is that. But after success in North Africa, the Allies invade Italy. Mussolini's government collapses. Then there's the invasion of Normandy. The Allies crossed the English Channel, which, by the way, was done just to buy time. I mean, from a military perspective, absolutely ludicrous to storm fortified beaches when you already have a presence on the soft underbelly of Europe. And Churchill didn't want this, and General Montgomery didn't want this. It was FDR and Eisenhower who pushed for it. And the idea was, you know, we could delay the advance in the West, give the Soviets as much time as possible to come east and grab Eastern Europe. That was the game all along, to give the East to Joe Stalin. So by 43, 44, you had the Allied terror bombings killing literally millions of Germans, burning them alive. These were incendiary bombings that were intended for the sole purpose of starting huge fires, tornadoes of fires, so strong that they could pick German women and children up off the street into the tornado of fire. I mean, horrendous. Dante, in his wildest imagination, could not describe the scene
I agree.
That happened in German cities.
Now, Kurt Vonnegut wrote about it.
Yeah, that's right. Horrible. That's the Holocaust. So the Soviets closed in from the east, the Allies from the west, and finally, by April 1945, they capture Berlin. It's unconditional surrender, May 8th, 1945. And what do you think happened on May 7th, 1940, the eve of the surrender. A legend was born. A Soviet commission released a report that there were gas chambers at Auschwitz and 4 million people were murdered at Auschwitz. That was a Soviet commission put out
that report. The bronze plaque at Auschwitz, which used to say 4 million, had to eventually, under scrutiny of honest inquiry, be reduced to 3 million, and then further reduced to 2 million, and then 1 million.
And it's probably a million too high.
Now it says approximately a million.
Yeah.
And people don't understand that by 1943, Germany was beginning to starve. By 44, everybody was starving because of the unceasing bombing of civilian targets, infrastructure, railroads, bridges, agriculture, you name it, all of it being wiped out. The Allies never bombed the railways into or out of Auschwitz. Never bombed any of the so-called extermination camps. And everybody knew about the allegations and the stories even before that report came out in 1945. It was in the New York Times they were complaining about extermination camps earlier. But nothing was done. Why? Because Western industrialist globalist had a stake in those camps and in that labor. Go ahead.
Well, so that was pretty much all she wrote for Germany.
And what happened between 1945 and 1953? Another 7 to 8 million Germans were exterminated, basically the last of the German nationalist class.
Yeah,
they wanted to subdue that country forever, and they did.
Yeah, no, the nightmare did not end in 1945.
Not for the German people.
It began. Systematic extermination, imprisonment. 2 million German women raped in the East, gang raped. Eisenhower deliberately murdering through starvation and disease 1.5 million German prisoners of war.
Yeah, they were Wehrmacht. Luftwaffe, the Kriegsmarine, German military, killed them. This is another Holocaust.
Yep, killed them.
After the war, if I didn't make that clear. After the war.
After the war, they kept prisoners for up to a year and a half. There was no reason for it. Germany had surrendered unconditionally. And then there's a few other million that Eisenhower, Stalin's favorite little general, shipped to the Soviet Union against their will. I mean, then there were the Russian prisoners of war. Stalin had declared, "I do not have prisoners of war. I only have traitors." I mean, these guys were begging not to go back. And at bayonet point, they were shoved in the railroad cars and delivered back to Stalin. Just horrific, horrific. And then, of course, the war in Japan, that ends with the dropping of two atomic bombs. August 6th and August 10th, and an interesting thing happens on August 8th. The Soviet Union declares war on Japan. and that's for doing that, they were rewarded. They were given North Korea by FDR and the communist traitors around him. So this hasn't ended. The Korean War grows out of this, and communism in Asia grows out of this, and the Vietnam War, and you go all the way up until the present day. And, you know, like I said, until people understand World War II, you haven't really got a clue as to what's going on today, at least not totally. But it's just a horrific tale. But it's all there in bloody detail. TomatoBubble.com.
Thank you, Mike. That was a tour de force, just a remarkable presentation distilled in ways that anybody can understand it. And folks, that is really how it happened. Not how Hollywood tells you it happened, not how the perverted history books and the schools of this country tell you how it happened.
Hollywood's run by Germans, don't you know that, Jeff?
Of course. The Germans invented Hollywood.
And Arabs.
And the Arabs, yeah.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Jeff.
Thank you, Mike. My pleasure indeed. And I look forward to more wonderful articles from TomatoBubble.com and you. So we'll stay in touch.
Thank you.
Okay, good night. All right. That's really an important 2 hours. Hope you enjoyed that as much as you can enjoy learning the truth about one of the biggest lies in history. And there it is for you. Okay, that's our program tonight. We'll be back tomorrow, Friday night. And we're going to do some special things tomorrow night. Show you some pictures of... you come back tomorrow and we'll take you on a tour of something that is really unbelievable. Have a great night and a great day tomorrow. Talk soon.